All right, nice to have you with us on our Giants pregame. Giants go for the sweep here. On the homestand, they're 3-2, and against Texas at home, they're 19-5. My goodness, 30 runs in the last four games. No pitcher has gone five innings as a starter, and still they're one of the most interesting teams in baseball right now, and maybe one of the most unsung teams in baseball, but they face a lefty today. They've got that big right-handed lineup today. So we've got a lot to talk about, and we welcome in our good friend Adam Copeland at Adam Copes on Twitter and the star of the leadoff show on KNBR at 5 a.m. Adam, how are you today?
I'm good, Marty. I'm glad you brought up the sweep. I was thinking this morning about, you know, when we're normally on the patio for days like today on a Sunday morning, you see people rolling up to the game with their broomsticks. Are you a fan of bringing a broom to the yard for a sweep?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question. You know, I think the more things you do at the ballpark as a fan and you get more involved, that's the way it should be. You know, and you go back to the New York Mets in the 60s, and they started with, you know, the signs, and they would have people writing on sheets, and they had doubleheaders back then, and in between games of doubleheader, they'd have everyone walking on the field with their banners and things that they would write up. Why not? I think it's it gets everybody involved, and it's fun. It's fun at the ballpark.
Yeah, I've always thought that was one of the – it's fun if you get the sweep. I remember I was probably – I don't know, 14 or 15, and I think the Giants played an interleague series against the Blue Jays, which is just sort of a, you know, the classic Giants-Blue Jays rivalry is a weird one. Anyway, they won the first two games, and I think I was taking Bart back to San Leandro after the third game, and some guy had brought a broom to the yard, and I don't think they completed the sweep. I remember watching the guy on Bart having to lug his broom home, thinking that's a tough deal. If you don't get the sweep, then you gotta carry your broom back to Bart with you. I would just leave it under the seat at that point. But I'm with you. I like one of the baseball traditions that we haven't got to see this year. You know.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And then you didn't ask me about the size of the broom. You know,
you
could bring the broom like the umpire has, you know, in his pocket to clean off, you know,
right.
You know, the Eddie Montague broom to clean off the plate. So that's fun. I think anything you do that's fun at the ballpark. Hey, did you get to see our cutouts on TV?
I didn't see it yesterday. I was looking for it, but could you see them up in the corner behind
Absolutely.
The back? You were seeing behind the right hand. I still cannot see them on TV, Marty.
All right. Well, you're going to have to take a picture when they show that area and, you know, take a picture with your camera, then send it to me and I'll pick it out for you. Yeah, no, we're there.
Okay.
In fact, Ron Wotus today, when he was on today, he did the show sitting in front of you and I, our cutouts in the stand. So.
That's pretty funny. I'd imagine for the players and for the coaches, like, to look up and every once in a while, you know, you see familiar faces. I saw on TV that they glossed over an Alex Pavlovic one. I know that the Matt Maiocco of NBC Bay Area has one out there. So it's funny. They do pan over and you see faces you recognize.
Well, last night, as I said, boy, you know, I've watched a lot of Major League Baseball, and I'm sure, you know, I've seen games that are worse than what I saw last night, at least from the Texas standpoint. But, you know, they walked 11, and they hit a batter. And as I said to Bruce Jenkins, they weren't getting squeezed either. I mean, they really did walk 11. They couldn't find the plate at all. It was almost embarrassing.
Well, yeah, and you know, you want to give some credit to the Giants for being able to lay off pitches, but you're right. It's not like they were real difficult walks to take. They just kind of stood there and you know, credit to their patience to say, I'm not going to go chasing, and you take what the game will give you. But I'm with you. You got to throw strikes. And when you don't throw strikes like that as a staff, I think you really put the pressure on your defense because guys don't stay as sharp. Guys aren't on their toes. It's hard to stay focused. And I'd imagine, especially in a weird situation like this, I wonder about the focus of a fielder where there aren't a lot of other distractions, right? There's no crowd noise where you can say, all right, I've got to lock in on the game. I wonder if your mind drifts a little bit more, even in a ball game like this where there's, you know, there's nobody out there besides you and your teammates, and the guys are struggling to find the strike zone. So ultimately that was the reason I think the Giants were able to come away with a win, even after a little bit of sloppy defense, of course, on the rundown that they did not execute well. And they've kind of done that a few times where they've been a little lackluster on defense. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's an issue. I really do. Now, they've gotten away with it, and they got hurt against the Padres, and the Padres got some runs out of it. Of course, Samardzija today gave up a couple of home runs to the Padres. But the defense has put them in trouble and has left the pitchers out there a little bit longer. That cannot go on. And they're making, you know, Longoria and Crawford on the left side solid. I thought Solano did an amazing job yesterday and a couple of turns on the double play. I thought he really, really played well yesterday. Then you get belted first. So I think that's going to tighten up. But the catching defense is really important. There are two young catchers. And we said this before the season started. You know, they got to go out and get a veteran. They got Chris Herrmann. You know, he's sort of being stored in Sacramento right now. But at some point, as much as you like the story of Chadwick Tromp, and you love the story of Heinemann and the brothers and, you know, all this kind of stuff, you got to give me a catcher behind the dish that's a solid, solid defensive player. And I think that's where it starts.
Yeah, good catching and good first base play, I think, are two positions in baseball where unless you've got elite players at those positions, you can sort of point out some glaring holes. Like I remember when J.T. Snow first left the Giants and thinking, you know, we were really spoiled with defense at first base. And really we are with Brandon Belt, too. He's a plus defender over at first, and you hear Wotus talk about that a lot. But when you've got a catching situation and a first base situation where you start to notice the defense, that's where you've gotten the issue. And I think that's one of the things we really take for granted with Buster Posey. We talk about the offense hasn't been there as much the last couple of years, and everybody points to his elite receiving skills, his elite defense behind the plate, how he handles the pitching staff, but you really do notice it when you've got a young staff. You've got, you know, for the first couple of weeks, maybe a different infield than the veterans that you're used to. To have that anchor and to have that captain is huge. And I think Heinemann's done a nice job, and Tromp obviously just came up. But you're right. I think you're absolutely right, Marty, that you miss the defense there, and you notice it a lot more when you don't have an elite receiver back there like Buster Posey.
Yeah, it's the other end of the spectrum. I mean, you got Posey, who's a potential Hall of Famer and a great defensive catcher, and he's made himself a much better defensive catcher. And then you get this side of the coin, you know, with the, you know, giving a hitch with the target, and Mike Kruko has been great of explaining it. So, yeah, it's got to tighten up. And plus, I'd like to give away $200. You know, for the, you know, the Bay Alarm, you know, to the community fund.
Throw somebody out, yeah.
They haven't thrown anyone out yet, so I gave away $200 today, just like a quiz show, you know, where someone gets eliminated and you say, all right, you go home with a Jeopardy game plus $200, you know, so.
Right.
So
right.
I gave that away today. All right, Adam Copeland with us. All right, let me ask you about the first week of Giants baseball. It's been fun. And look, we're in the West. We're not in the trouble of the East with the Marlins and the Cardinals and who knows what's going to happen with the Phillies and everybody else and all the games that have been missed. And Votto today and Chris Bryant today complaining maybe they've got symptoms. Out here, it's been very, very quiet. What's your assessment of the first week of Giants baseball?
Well, I think that because it's been sort of a relief, actually, for me, because I think everything you've just said is true, and that, you know, on the East Coast, we're dealing with the realities of the world, COVID meshing in with baseball. And I know that the players day to day are dealing with it, too. But because we haven't really had the outbreaks in either the AL West or the NL West, and it's not to say it won't happen. It's not to say somebody won't test positive and games will be postponed. But I feel like we've gotten to really focus on baseball. I feel like because we have not had those outside issues that we've gotten to talk about the pitching staff. We've gotten to talk about the defense. We've gotten to come up with new nicknames for Donovan Solano, if you like Don Salami or Donnie Barrels or whatever they're using, Marty. yeah, we got to get your vote on Donovan Solano nicknames too, Marty. But
okay.
I think it's been a little different. I think out here, to your point, we've gotten to focus just on baseball, which has been kind of the relief. And I think the point of why baseball so badly wanted to get this season in is it's why we love sports, right? They do pull us out of some of the tough things we deal with in the day-to-day life. But it is also a weird juxtaposing thought where we've got baseball here and we're excited about what the Giants are doing and they're above 500 for the first time. And then you've got eight teams who have had games either postponed or canceled or moved and we're having to sort of move with the flow of the season. So do you get where I'm coming from there? Do you share that sentiment?
Yeah, no,
about baseball for us? Yeah,
no, very well said. And look, this is what baseball's supposed to do. And I said it yesterday. I mentioned it to you. You know, that maybe baseball is the example for the country. Even though we're not perfect, we're trying to be perfect. And even though Cespedes didn't show up to the game today, and who knows where he is, we're trying to be perfect. But as a country, this is what is needed. So I think baseball comes through in that regard. And I think it's been a success. I really do, and I realize the Marlin and Cardinal thing and the players violated the trust and going to clubs and all that kind of stuff. But I just think it's been a success.
Yeah, I think it has to an extent. I don't know that I'm ready to call it a success yet, because I think being a week in with as many changes as we've had is a little bit alarming. I want to see the reaction. I want to see if they really can make this thing happen. I think if they can do that and they can say, hey, well, there hasn't been a bigger outbreak. The Cardinals are saying maybe we're past that little scare we had this past weekend, because they don't think they're having more positive tests. The Marlins seem like they're doing a little bit better, though they got up to 18 players the other day. I don't know that I'd call it a success yet from my perspective, but I think they can if they get to a couple more weeks and this thing is able to flatten out a little bit, if maybe they've been able to make the adjustments to make this thing run a little smoother.
Well, let me put it this way, and I agree. You're very accurate in what you say. Maybe the term is it's been a success on the field, where it looks where it looks like baseball. That to me has been a success. And, you know, with all the protocols and the masks and the no fans and all that, it looks like baseball to me. So that's been successful. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that it doesn't feel like it feels like we're watching the game of baseball at least until we get to the 10th.
Very good. All right, we're going to take a break. Hey, this 41 years ago, we lost Thurman Munson. And I know it's before your time, but he was an amazing player. And I want to acknowledge that today. And we're going to come back, and you and I will chat for a minute or two. But we've got about a 7-minute clip with Jerry Narron, who was the catcher. He was just a rookie way back in 79 when all this happened. And he was the catcher who had to replace Thurman Munson, and tells us a lot of really good stories about Munson and Yankee teams in those days, and explains who Thurman Munson was. So we'll take a break. Adam and I will come back, and we'll set that up right after this. So, Adam, we'll concentrate a little bit on Thurman Munson, the great Yankee captain who passed away August 2nd of 79 in a private plane crash. But your thoughts on Munson before we play this little clip from Jerry Narron, which is about 7 minutes?
You know, I think the fact that he was such a big player and that he was a captain of the Yankees, which holds a lot of weight, I think, anyway, in baseball history and baseball lore. The fact that he had passed away in the circumstances that he did, sort of like Roberto Clemente, sometimes I think that stuff overshadows the player and the man that he was. And I think it'll be interesting. It'll be fun here to get a little insight from Jerry Narron on the man that Thurman Munson was.
Good segue. All right. Here's my chat with Jerry Narron. Jerry Narron has been a manager with the Rangers and the Reds. He's a longtime coach. He's with the Red Sox now, and a very engaging guy. So here's my conversation with Jerry Narron. Marty Lurie here on Memories of the Game with Jerry Narron. Always great to have you on. Some great baseball stories. You played in an era with some of the greats of the game, especially your time with the Yankees. And as I said earlier, Ron Guidry and I did a nice show recently about Thurman Munson. And the way Munson used to come out to the mound to talk to the pitchers, and just what he used to say at home plate, and how he annoy everybody, and what he would do when he would come to the plate. He was a very interesting man.
He liked annoying people, but Thurman was great. He was awesome. In 79, Bob Lemon got fired. Billy Martin's coming in. And Thurman tells me, he said, you know, when Billy was a player, he could not hit a curveball. So call as many curveballs as you can. He said, the other thing is, if Billy ever looks like he's mad at you, go ahead and hit him before he sucker punches you.
But the way Thurman handled the pitchers, he would be one of those guys, as I said in our opening today, he would go out to the mound and tell Guidry, hey, listen, you don't do what I'm going to tell you, I'm going to break your legs.
He was always coming up with something. But, you know, when you have that kind of ball club with a bunch of veteran guys, there was a lot of ragging and that type thing, and Thurman was one of the leaders of that. And I can remember one spring training, Thurman got in the batting cage. I was catching. He says, I'm going to hit the ball down the third base line, first base line, off the pitching screen, and off your mask. And he did it with the third base line, right field line, up the middle. It didn't hit the screen, and he fouled one back. He just missed my mask, but he just laughed.
You're on the Yankees with great pennant races, great drives to the playoffs and things like that. Maybe get some of your recollections of that.
My first day in the big leagues, I was a call-up, September call-up in 78, and there was a rain delay in Detroit. There were some guys playing cards, and they have the national anthem. The game finally gets started. It got started late. Mickey Rivers couldn't be found. He was the leadoff hitter, and everybody's looking for Mickey. Finally, you can see him getting, coming through the dugout, putting his shirt tail in and buttoning his shirt, goes up to home plate and hits a double. He went straight from the card table to second base.
I've heard those stories about Mickey Rivers. Jerry Nairn with us. But the pitchers on that team, you really had clutch pitching. And, boy, that September pennant race of 78, maybe we should start with that.
Well, Guidry was just phenomenal all year. Guidry had a couple years there, 77, 78, 79, right in that area. He was as good as ever been out on the mound. In 78, Jim Rice had a tremendous year. I think Rice was the MVP, which he deserved, but Guidry was right there, too. If Guidry wouldn't have had the year, I think he was 25-3 or something. If he wouldn't have had that kind of year, the Yankees wouldn't have been anywhere close. But Guidry was just outstanding. Catfish Hunter was on the club. Guys like Gossage. I mean, it was just a tremendous ball club.
You caught those players. Maybe get a little bit of a scouting report from you on the Guidry slider, the Gossage fastball, and the pinpoint control of a Catfish Hunter.
Well, Catfish had maybe the best command of anybody I've ever called. He and Don Sutton were just phenomenal. I had Sutton, California. But Catfish is just outstanding. Had a live fastball. He seemed he could throw a fastball that just took off. He would throw it up and away to right-handers, and the ball would just kind of sail, and the same would come in on left-handers. I think that's why he was so successful in Oakland all those years. He was throwing that high fastball to right-handers, and they couldn't hit the ball out of the ballpark. But, Catfish, Gossage, I think Gossage should be in the Hall of Fame. He's just had three inning saves and that type thing. And Gossage definitely should get more recognition than he's ever gotten. And, I can remember catching Goose in Fenway one night, and Yastrzemski's up to bat. Ron Luciano was behind the plate. And I think the first pitch was right down the middle of the plate. And I said, Ronnie, that pitch is right there. He said, well, this is Fenway, and Yaz didn't swing, so that's a ball. I said, Ronnie, I tell you what, if I go out there and tell Gossage what you just said, he's going to hit him in the neck. So Ronnie said, okay. So next pitch, just off the plate a little bit, and he called a strike. So he evened it up a little bit. But Gossage was such a competitor. I guarantee you, if I'd have gone out there and told him what Luciano said, he would have probably drilled Yaz.
Jerry Nairn with us. Great to hear some of these baseball stories. Jerry, Ron Luciano, and you described the action of him, and he was that way on the field to the fans who could see him. Any other umpires like that?
There are very few guys today like that. But, at that time, you didn't have the cameras and the angles and the Quest Tech and everything. And Ronnie really thought he was doing Yaz a favor there in Fenway, but he told the wrong guy.
Talk a little bit about Yaz and the great Carl Yastrzemski. Of course, this is towards the end of his career, but what a clutch hitter. 1967 for me, still maybe the greatest September I've ever seen in my baseball life.
Well, in 67, I was 11 years old, so playing Little League in the year Yaz had, he was the guy. And the next year, everybody wanted the Triple Crown glove that Yaz had, just a tremendous clutch player all through his career, and one of my heroes growing up. And it was he got his 3,000th hit when I was catching, so that was a big thrill for me.
It took a while to get that 3,000th hit. I think it was against the Orioles, if I'm not mistaken.
It was against the Yankees. Jim Beattie pitching, and had a ground ball hit through the hole between first and second.
Yeah, I remember. You're right. It took him a while to get that hit. It wasn't so simple.
But just a great, great player. And I was with the Red Sox in 03, and I don't know a lot of people realize it, but Yaz works with the minor leaguers with the Red Sox during the spring. He's a guy that's not out to get the limelight. I went over and talked to the minor league catchers one day when I was with the Red Sox, and I asked him about, man, you should come over here to the – big league club and just hang around a little bit, but he didn't want any part of that limelight. He wanted to work with the minor leaguers, and I think there are a lot of people, Red Sox fans even, that don't realize that.
Jerry Nairn with us on Memories of the Game. While you were with the Yankees, did you ever catch Whitey Ford in spring training?
No, but Whitey was always around. Mickey was always around. As a matter of fact, I want to say it was 76, my first big league spring training with the Yankees. I walk in the door, and Mickey's the first guy standing there, and I'll never forget he had on jeans and a pair of light blue cowboy boots, which weren't very fashionable at the time, but I introduced myself, and he said, "I'm Mickey Mantle, a pleasure to meet you." I said, "Wait a minute. First of all, you don't have to introduce yourself, and it is definitely my pleasure." But Mickey was just an outstanding guy. I don't. There are probably very few super duper stars in this game that were as down to earth and as helpful and congenial to younger guys than Mickey was. He was just a superman.
That is Jerry Nairn, and Adam, why I wanted to have him on today, and I really enjoyed listening to him. Thurman Munson was the king of that era of baseball, of Yankee baseball, of Guidry and Gossage and Catfish and Mickey Rivers and the umpires and all that. I just thought Jerry Nairn demonstrated why Munson was that special guy.
Yeah, and Jerry Nairn, sort of 2 days in a row now that we're talking about a couple of baseball lifers, and he's a guy still around, still in the game and coaching, I believe. And he's you get to hit on all sorts of stuff there. Yeah, you hit on Guidry, and you hit on Thurman Munson, but you also got a Yaz hit, a Yastrzemski hit, which was pretty cool and relevant to us in the Bay Area now that we've got Mike Yastrzemski here. So, no, just a cool, wide-ranging conversation, Marty.
Yeah, yeah, and it really just, for me, it was, you know, Munson was the essence of that. You know, the tough guy, the spanky guy behind the plate, and he was an all-star and a gold glover. So, I don't know, it's just one of those parts of baseball that I like to reflect back on. But Jerry Nairn tells a good story. I like the story about Munson saying about Billy Martin. He couldn't hit a curveball, just call a lot of curveballs. So I like that.
That was good. I like the Mickey Mantle story, because I think anytime you hear stories from guys who have directly come in contact with Mickey Mantle, they almost all say he was the jokester. He was one of the guys. He liked being one of the guys. So we're in the light blue cowboy boots. You ever got a pair of blue cowboy boots, Martin?
No, I haven't. Last pair of cowboy
you don't
boots
seem like
I
a
had.
Cowboy boot guy. Yeah.
No, are you a cowboy boot guy?
No, I'm not even really a boot guy. I don't think I have a pair of boots.
Now, for me, cowboy boots, I'd have to go back probably to 6 years old in Brooklyn, something like that, you know, with the cap gun and all that stuff. But, well, it's Sunday baseball. I like Sunday baseball. I do. I like waking up talking about it. I like bringing the fans along, and we got an afternoon game. Sunday baseball, for me, has always been fun.
It's great. And even Sasha now knows. She knew I was doing the hit with you, and she said, well, that's in the morning on Sunday, right? Because I know Saturday sometimes you get an evening game. But she knows. Everybody knows. Day game on Sunday. It's the way it's supposed to be played. I'm with you.
Well, we got Kershaw going today. That's an interesting one. The pitching matchups, we don't know who the Giants are going to throw in Colorado, but they've listed all their top starters against the Giants. And I'm looking forward to the week, four in Colorado, and then the Dodgers before we talk again next Saturday. So this is another defining baseball week for the Giants, isn't it?
It is. And the other thing that's kind of funny about this, and you're right, getting back on the road and going to Colorado is you know, having to deal with them is never easy. But, you know, it's interesting now that every game is a division game, right? Even when you're playing these interleague games against Texas, these all matter. These are all important. There's so few games and they're all division games. It's just kind of line them up and knock them down. But it was an exciting week. I'm in for another one.
Yeah, yeah, it is good. And what's your schedule this week? What are you doing this week?
Murph is out all week, so me and Pauly Mac are on. I'll be in the leadoff spot all week, and then on with Pauly Mac until 10 a.m. every day, and then playing some golf on Tuesday, and that's about it. So baseball and hanging out at the leader. That's what my week entails.
Very good. Well, take care of yourself. Be safe, and I love having you on these talkbacks, and we'll do it again next weekend. So be well.
All right, Marty. We'll talk this week.
All right, that is Adam Copeland. Our Giants pregame continues. We'll go to the booth next, right after this.